Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fabulous Friday to you. We made it through another week. We're going to kick off your weekend in grand style right now on the Cale Clark Show. Why don't you call in 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you have a question, if you have a take about what we're going to talk about later in the show, you can do that right now. You can also, of course, use email if you're so inclined. You can hop on your laptop. You know what? I was watching the Field of Dreams game last night, and it takes place, of course, near the site where the movie was filmed in Dyersville, Iowa. And apparently that was where, in Iowa, they made the first computer, which I didn't know, at Iowa State University. Apparently the thing weighed over 700 pounds. Weird factoid. But anyways, if you want to hop on your 700-pound laptop, hopefully yours doesn't weigh that much, you can... Yeah, when the tool weighs more, that doesn't really work. But you can email me, Cale, at relevantradio.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And by the way, speaking of Twitter, I tweeted this out earlier. I want to start with this. Later on, I'm going to talk about how I was wrong about something biblical. And I hate to admit this because... I've used this so many times when I've been in the Holy Land, when I've been taking people on tours and seeing the sites. I've used this because it preaches so well, but apparently it's not true. And I have to admit, I've been wrong all these years. And it's okay. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. This has something to do with the life of Jesus and a pretty important site in the Holy Land. But I'll talk about that later, how I was wrong. And I'm man enough to admit it. And speaking of being wrong... about biblical stuff and faith stuff. You know, there's a really popular evangelical Bible teacher by the name of Beth Moore. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she has over 1 million followers on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, you might have seen this on my Twitter feed just before the show, and Relevant Radio reposted it as well. So Beth Moore tweeted something a day ago. And whenever I look on Twitter and I see what's trending, I always check to see what's trending. And I was gonna change the name of the show to Trending with Cale, but I think Timmery would probably be mad about that because she's copyrighted that. So that's a different show that comes on after this one, Trending with Timmery. But having said that, I know my friend Timmery would, she'll never be mad at me. But anyways, I always check to see what's trending. And whenever something religious is trending, I always think, you know, this could either be a really good thing or a really bad thing. So I better check this out. Beth Moore was trending. I was like, okay, what's going on here? And a lot of people have, hundreds of thousands of people have had their knickers in a knot over something that she said on Twitter. Apparently she's kind of relatable. Like she's kind of, you know, she's very, I don't know. I would describe her style as kind of approachable, but anyhow. She's apparently growing grapes now, and I don't know really why that is, but maybe just because she likes grapes, or she's got some sort of vineyard. I don't know what the deal is. But here's what she tweeted yesterday. She tweeted, "I'm growing grapes for reals. It's like a miracle in 50 jillion degree weather. If Jesus is trying to get me to have a crush on him, it's working," end of quote. Okay, so that was the tweet. I'll read it again in case you missed it. And some people are really, really upset that she said this. She said, quote, "I'm growing grapes for reals. It's like a miracle in 50 jillion degree weather." Now, one guy said, "I'm actually more mad at her for using the term for reals in a tweet and using the word jillion than anything theological she may have said." But I digress a little bit. She said, "I'm growing grapes for reals. It's like a miracle in 50 jillion degree weather. If Jesus is trying to get me to have a crush on him, it's working," end of quote. So some people see this as incredibly disrespectful to Jesus. And one person tweeted this, hashtag gross, hashtag disrespectful, hashtag blasphemous. That was the quote. Do you agree with that? Or do you think it's kind of innocuous? Do you think it is actually kind of an expression of love for Christ? Here's what another person on Twitter said. People upset, and this is kind of a pro Beth Moore tweet, I guess you could say. People upset at Beth Moore's tweet about grapes and crushing on Jesus should pause for a second and think about all the popular worship songs they've sang that could have very well been a song to your lover had it not been sung by a Christian artist. End of quote. Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of contemporary Christian music that's kind of couched as love songs to the Lord kind of thing. And if you didn't know that it was a religious song, you might think it's just a generic love song of some sort. So what do you think? Did she go too far with this tweet, or is this something innocuous? Are people dragging her for no good reason? I'm curious to see what you think about this. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. And I also retweeted it, so you can check my Twitter feed too, and you can respond there as well. Give me your thoughts at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And maybe Patrick Alog, who's taking the calls right now, if you wouldn't mind just monitoring the Twitter feed for that too, because I'm a terrible multitasker, you can tell me. And tell me what's going on. So anyway, so here's some other takes on this, some other hot takes on Twitter. Another user said, so sad to see this attack against Beth Moore. I'm guessing these same people do not understand the Song of Solomon either. And that's a reference to the biblical book, of course, the Song of Solomon, which is also known as the Song of Songs. And it's kind of love poetry, but it's really a lot of people interpret it as the soul in love with God. All right. So sad, this person said, so sad to see this attack against Beth Moore. I'm guessing these same people do not understand the Song of Solomon either, or the fact that we as the church are the bride of Christ. Also, they would probably attack the woman at the well for, well, no, I threw that in there, bad pun. The woman at the well for all the sermons that she preached. And of course, she was an evangelist for the gospel as well after she met the Messiah at the well, right? But other people are not so keen on this. And there's also a big part of this is that there's a huge debate in the Protestant world about whether or not women should be allowed to preach or teach. And so that kind of factors into all this as well on that side of the equation. Another user said, I'm increasingly embarrassed that I used to listen to Beth Moore. She says she has read her Bible hundreds of times and memorized entire books of the Bible. I just have a hard time believing that. Knowing scripture should cause you to grow in increasing awe and reverence for God, should it not? End of quote. All right, so that's one of the negative takes. And another person said, in response to Beth Moore, Jesus Christ is not your boyfriend or your homeboy. He is your Lord, your Savior, your Creator, your Sustainer, your King, and your God. Beth Moore doesn't have a clue who the true Jesus of the Bible even is. Read the book of Colossians, for goodness sakes. All right. So, and then other people, yeah, again, this is really the people with strong takes on either side. Here's another one sort of in favor of sort of her playful nature, if you will. Theobro's anger at Beth Moore talking about continuously falling further in love with Jesus says way more about them than it does about her. Another user, I literally cannot believe the drama over Beth Moore's playful tweet. I also cannot believe men and women who think that women should be silent about God are still on Twitter, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so she says another gentleman weighed in here. He said, dudes, get over yourselves. You don't get to decide who is saved. You will know a tree by its fruit, or maybe a vineyard by its fruit in this case. And Beth Moore's fruit is thousands of people drawn closer to the God who loves us. And I can't resist sharing this rather funny tweet here. Let's see if I can find it here. I can't find it, but it's basically something to the effect of, you know, because she was tweeting about her grapes. And she said, I guess she loves Jesus a whole bunch. Anyways, do you think this is blasphemous? Do you think this is just an expression of, wow, God is creating, you know, this the very fact of the creation of these grapes and the beauty of nature, it's just making me fall more in love with God. Did she use poor language to talk about this? What do you think? I'm going to go to the phones right now. Mark is calling from Pinellas Park, Florida. Hey, I've been to Pinellas Park many times because my parents used to live there. Snowbirds used to hang out there in the wintertime. So, Mark, good to talk to you. What's your take on all this?
Well, I kind of think she was just using a play on words, you know, bunch of grapes and, you know, crushing the grapes. And I think she's just being funny. The Lord made the sense of humor. And sometimes I think Catholics are kind of rigid, and I'm Catholic. And, they're sort of oriented to the masses and all the teachings. And I think sometimes when somebody steps outside the box for a moment and has a sense of humor, sometimes it rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah, that's true, Mark. I think a lot of people certainly are a little humorless when it comes to that. We always have to sort of be like deadpan serious when we're talking about theological issues and things like that. I don't think it's necessarily the case. And I've spoken a lot about the humor of Jesus. Jesus was actually incredibly funny. If you understand his teachings in a Hebrew context, it's very, very funny stuff. Some of the stuff he said in the Sermon on the Mount, just excoriating the false teachers of his day. Talking about the hypocrites. I mean, people would have been in stitches. It doesn't come across very well sometimes, but to us as we're reading this on the page, but it's often Hebrew humor by exaggeration. So when he talks about, hey, before you peck the speck of sawdust out of your brother or sister's eye, why not pull the telephone pole out of your own eye? I mean, that was really funny stuff back in the day. So Mark, thank you for that take. Appreciate that. And thanks for listening to the Cale Clark Show. That's Mark in Pinellas Park, Florida. If you have a take on this, and a lot of you do, a lot of you are calling in right now, 888-914-9149. So let me go now to Steve in Minnesota. Hey, Steve.
How you doing, Cale? Nice to talk with you.
It's great to talk to you as well. And what's your perspective on all this, Steve? What do you think? Did she go too far?
Well, you know, I guess I don't want to be so dogmatic to say that this nullifies her ministry or her effectiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, only God can judge all that. But I will tell you this. This is a great example for me personally of why I am stepping away from Protestantism and gravitating. I'm on my own journey, and I've called you before on some other topics, but I'm gravitating toward Catholicism because I think there's a lost in. I was part of a seeker-sensitive evangelical church denomination for years, and it's making it's the whole idea of making Jesus your cool, you know, buddy. And I'm all about approaching the throne room of God's grace. And that all, you know, we have that freedom, and we're children of God. And I appreciate the Catholic teaching on that, even the covenant versus a contract relationship. Yeah. God's my father. But I think there's this kind of, hey, you know, high five God and you know, making God so contemporary and popularizing him to the point to where, like one caller said, you know, he's our savior. He died on the cross. He suffered for us. He is the triune God. He, you know, there's a like one person once said to me, and I think you would know this because you live in the Toronto area, you know, you can be fearful of Niagara Falls in the sense that you stand there with awe and there's a sense of like majesty to it. You don't necessarily want to throw a frisbee along the side of it because you know what, if you go over, you're done. And I don't think we need to fear God in a way that would cause us to be able to not, you know, feel like we know him and can be approach him. But I think this comment from Beth Moore kind of goes down that path, and I kind of agree with the guy that said, you know, the Reels thing and the other comment about you know, I mean, it just kind of, you know, it's like, okay, I get it, but come on, Beth, you're not in you know, middle school. Let's try to step that up. And she's being cute, and she's probably excited in the moment about her grapes, and I get that. I mean, and I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But I think that comment, for me personally, is why I find the substance, the history, the foundation of the Catholic Church is so refreshing. And quite frankly, it's the only church on the planet right now that's standing for anything. And I want to thank you because in my own journey, you've been a big part of this. And Patrick in the Morning has been a big part of it. And I could just go on and on and on. But this triggered something in me enough today to call just to say, you know, Jesus is my Savior, and we are co-heirs and all this stuff. There's a depth to that. But you know what? I don't want to crush on him. I want Jesus to be somebody that's beyond that. You know, I can have a crush on my wife or, these people that see movie stars and they go, yeah, I have a, you know, crush on. It's like, okay, that's fine, sort of. But Jesus is not someone that I want to bring down to that level. And those are just my thoughts. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, persecute somebody if they felt differently or push them in the corner and say, you know, I'm right and you're wrong. But I appreciate the reverence that the Catholic Church has for the triune God.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for that call. And I'm so thankful also that Relevant Radio has been such a help to you on your journey. And I love the fact that a lot of non-Catholics listen to this program, listen to the Cale Clark Show or the Faith Explained or any of the other shows we have on Relevant Radio. And that, to me, speaks volumes. I'm glad whenever somebody calls in who's not Catholic, who's listening and maybe is benefiting from these programs. And I'm thankful it's been a help to you, Steve. And I don't even know what to think about this whole comment by Beth Moore. And in case you missed it off the top, Twitter is all aflutter over this comment that she made, and she's growing some grapes. She's a popular Protestant Bible teacher, has over 1 million followers on Twitter. And here's the tweet: "I'm growing grapes for reels." Now, I mean, the way she's talking, I don't really care about that. I mean, she's just kind of being herself, I guess, and you know, trying to not. She's not writing an essay or anything like that. It's a tweet: "I'm growing grapes for reels. It's like a miracle. In 50 jillion degree weather, if Jesus is trying to get me to have a crush on him, it's working," end of quote. And some people are saying, no, you've gone too far. Don't speak of Jesus that way. It's disrespectful. Other people are saying, come on. I read one user said, hey, stop trying to... Here's the tweet. I just found it. Another Twitter user said, "I saw someone say they couldn't help but think of lust when she read Beth Moore's grape tweet, tweeting about crushing on Jesus." The writer went on to say, "How sexualized must your entire worldview be that you can't read about a crush without thinking about lust?" And it was clear what she was saying. Goodness, end of quote. And so is this disrespectful? Is it not? And I appreciate what Steve said about one of the things that's drawing him to the Catholic Church is the reverence that is shown to our triune God in the church. And maybe he was thinking that, now he's not on the call anymore, but maybe he was thinking about worship. And it's true that, and I spent about 10 years in the evangelical world before coming back into the Catholic Church, and I saw a lot of informal, seeker-sensitive worship. And Steve talked about being in a seeker-sensitive church. And very often things are incredibly informal in these groups. And there's kind of a range, right, in Protestant churches. Some of them are highly liturgical. Some of them are way more casual. And I think, again, the reason why they're doing it is they're trying to reach people. They're trying to make church relatable for people who don't like going to church, if you will. And is that even a good approach? I mean, that's a whole other can of worms, right? Because I remember reading a book that was written by another convert to Catholicism. And this guy, by the way, his sister was a very famous evangelical by the name of Elizabeth Elliot. And Elizabeth Elliot's husband, Jim, was killed on the mission field trying to reach the Alka Indians with the gospel, a very unreached people group. And he was killed. And so she wrote a lot of books about this. So Elizabeth Elliot's brother is a guy named Thomas Howard. Now, Thomas Howard passed away recently, but he converted to Catholicism. And it was kind of a big deal when he did that. And he wrote, one of the things he wrote about being Catholic was that, hey, when you look at the early church, they didn't do market research surveys to try to see what kind of worship would be attractive to people, what would reach the barbarians the best, or the Scythians, you know, or people like that. They say, no, it's the Mass, and you need to wrap your mind around the Mass rather than let's try to find a seeker sensitive worship that'll reach your group better. Well, and there's kind of a point to that, I think, because all throughout salvation history, you know, people didn't have a choice about how they were to worship God. God laid it down. And very soon on the Faith Explained program, I can't wait. This is going to be our next major series. We're going to be looking at the book of Exodus. So that's coming up soon. Stay tuned for more news on that, when that's going to drop. But God on Mount Sinai gave Moses the pattern. This is how worship is going to be. This is how you're going to construct the tabernacle and the future temple down the road in Jerusalem. This isn't something that you guys are going to take a vote on, okay? And it's kind of the same way in the New Testament as well. When Jesus institutes the Mass, he says, do this in remembrance of me. And I know that things change with respect to worship a little bit through the years, but the bare bones is still there. When you read St. Justin Martyr writing in the early 2nd century, mid-2nd century, when he describes the Mass to the Roman emperor, and you can read his letter, his first apology, it's quoted extensively in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it basically lays out the Mass in the same format that we have today. Now, some of the accoutrements are a little bit different. Maybe there's no Gregorian chant back then or whatever. Maybe that's your thing. Maybe it's not. But the point of the matter is that the Mass is the Mass. And so we can argue about some of the details. And that's something that needs to be reckoned with. How does God want to be worshipped? How does God want to be dealt with in that sense? So this just opens up a lot of things we could talk about. And I know you guys have takes on this. So if you're on the phone, please stay there. We got to take a very, very short break here on the Cale Clark Show, but we will get to more of your calls right after this break. David, Damon, John, hang on. Anybody else is there? 888-914-9149. Got a couple lines open on the Cale Clark Show. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good to be back with you. It is Friday, August the 12th, 2022. We're just kicking off the weekend here on the Cale Clark Show and glad to be with you. You can call in right now. We're talking about this viral tweet. I should say maybe it's a vine roll tweet. Oh, that's a terrible pun. That's tortured. So Beth Moore, who's a very popular evangelical Protestant Bible teacher, has over 1 million followers on Twitter, has got a lot of people talking about her, and some defending her, some criticizing her for this tweet, which I'm going to read to you. Quote, she's growing grapes right now, by the way. I'm growing grapes for reals, she says, for reals. It's like a miracle in 50 jillion degree weather. If Jesus is trying to get me to have a crush on him, it's working. End of quote. Now, one caller had called in earlier saying, who the heck is Beth Moore? that's who she is. Now, I don't, if you haven't heard of her, that's okay. I mean, it's hard to know all the characters that are out there. But a lot of you guys, I basically asked you guys, what do you think about this? Is this blasphemous? Is this disrespectful toward God? Or is this totally fine? And in the Twitterverse, people are really coming. It's really dividing people. It's really dividing people. I read you some tweets, what people are saying about this. One person said, this is a Twitter user named Jake, said, simply begging people who are calling Beth Moore unchristian for using romantic language in spiritual contexts. I challenge these people to read anything by medieval Christians. Now, I gotta confess to you, I don't spend too much time reading medieval works of theology, but apparently that's a big theme. And if you're a medievalist, you can call in and give me the lowdown, 888-914-9149. But I want to get your take on this. Did she go too far? Is she being too colloquial in her language about the Lord? Or is this just normal conversational language kind of thing? God understands. What do you think about this? David is calling from Santa Maria, California. Hey, David, what do you think about this?
I think it's great. I think that Beth has taken, you know, grapes and being crushed and used it and put passion in it because she's saying, hey, I've got a crush on Jesus. I know that a lot of people, you know, they feel like our our society has desecrated things. They've taken the sacred out of things, and they see her doing that, but I don't. And I started to think about it a little bit more, and I thought about Pope Benedict's 16th letter on God is love, and he talks about the three different loves, and he brings them together. And one of the things a lot of people do is they say, okay, you know, the agape love's good, and philo is good, but eros is, you know, something we don't want to go to. And in the letter, Benedict says, hey, all of these things, this wholeness we need to have. And even in Mass today, the priest was talking about the fear of God and was talking about marriage. And he talks about, because Jesus makes a very serious statement about, you know, hey, this is really heavy duty in regards to a man and a woman coming together. And he says, that's not the fear of, you know, like, hey, I'm going to be punished because I'm doing something wrong. He actually said that, hey, this is like if you're infatuated, if you have a crush on somebody, and he used those terms. He says, you're afraid, you know, you have this fear of approaching them and how wonderful they are. And, you know, and he gave this example in his homily. So I'm thinking, hey, I heard the quote, and I'm going, right on, look at this, you know, and not to, I think both people who have both perspectives, they're saying, hey, I feel that this is some type of desecration because people have been so flippant with the relationships with Jesus. But at the same time, I see that, you know, here she's with the analogy of the grapes and this, you know, play on the word crush. You know, the grapes are crushed to create this wine and this passion. I think that's what I picked up on. And I'm going, this is fantastic. So that's my take on it.
David, thank you so much for that call. And you raised a lot of interesting points there. In mentioning the works of Pope Benedict, I mean, that's always a good thing to do. God is love. And I encourage everybody to, sometimes we don't really read the papal encyclicals, but we should, you know? And there's such great stuff there. And Pope Benedict was such a great teacher. Man, he was such a gifted teacher. Maybe he was the best that, I don't know how far back we can reach on this, but he was a great, great teacher. We've had so many great popes in recent years, of recent vintage, if you will, because we're talking about grapes, ha ha ha. But there was a saying that was very popular in Rome when Benedict was pope, and he's still alive. We need to pray for him. He's very frail. But he's Pope Emeritus now. But when he was Pope, people used to say that folks would go to Rome to see John Paul II, and they would go to Rome to listen to Benedict, to listen to his teaching, to hear his teaching. Now, there's no doubt that John Paul II was somewhat theatrical. I mean, he used to be an actor, and I think he used that a lot to make these sweeping gestures, these very grand statements. He used that very well. He was also obviously a massive intellect, and St. John Paul II wrote just incredibly deep theological stuff himself. But I do think that one thing I really like about Benedict's teaching is that it's very clear, and don't be intimidated by it. The average person can certainly pick up one of his writings, his homilies, his encyclicals, and read it and understand it. And I think he strived as Pope to be clear in his teaching, and that really shows forth. So thanks for mentioning him. That's a really good resource to go to on the concept of love in general. And you also referenced, of course, today's gospel from Matthew, when Jesus is talking about marriage, and so many great points there about that really have something to do with what true love is really all about, theology of the body. We could just go on and on about that. So thank you so much for that call, David, in Santa Maria, California. We're going to go now to Dee Dee in Phoenix. Hey, welcome back to the show, Dee Dee. We haven't talked to you in a while. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Kale. Well, the reason I'm calling is I am a Catholic, and I don't even know who this woman is, but I think she may unknowingly be mocking, in other words, blaspheming, the Catholic concept of a belief in transubstantiation, which is the consecration of the bread and wine. That's the substance of the body of Christ our Lord, and of the wine into the substance of his blood. And that's all I'm going to say.
Dee Dee, I mean, I suppose it's possible that this is somehow an attempt to mock the concept of transubstantiation, but I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it. And the reason anything's possible, but the reason why I would say that is because now I'm not super familiar with Beth Moore in terms of, but I know who she is, and I've read a lot of her tweets. She seems to be a pretty positive person, and I don't think she doesn't strike, again, not that I know her, but just based on her tweets and stuff, she doesn't strike me as somebody who would take a shot at the Catholic Church, especially like this is this is a shot at the Church. It's veiled quite well, because it's not that obvious to me if that's a shot at the Eucharist. I don't think so. To me, it's just she's kind of in awe at something as simple as the creation of a grape growing on a vine and the hand of God in creation and how she expresses her love for Christ for this. That's how, what people seem to be having a problem with. They think it's maybe a little bit too familiar, but a previous caller talked about the way we relate to God in worship, in public worship. I think that is on a different level than the way that we talk to God when we pray. And God certainly, when you read the Psalms, for example, you see a lot of examples of people pouring their heart out to God and saying things, even expressing kind of anger and disappointment at God. And God's big enough to handle that for sure. There have been plenty of moments maybe in your own life when you've wanted to shake your fist at the heavens and you're mad at God, whether that anger is righteous or justified or not. You know, it never is, but that's the way we feel sometimes. And I think God certainly understands what we're made of. He knows how we're made. He knows what's, as the Gospel of John says, Jesus knows what's in a man, knows what's in a woman, knows how we're created. We were created in and through him, so and for him. So he gets all that. And yeah, it's just an interesting place where people want to draw the line. And some people are upset at her. Some people are saying there's nothing wrong with this at all. So I'm thanks for calling in, Dee Dee. And I do appreciate the opinions that all you guys have about this. Let's go now to Doug in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Kale. I got some dad joke groaners for you.
All right, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So, well, if you're crushing that grape and presumably going to turn that into wine, that's not lust that is involved, but there is must that is involved.
Must. Okay, no, I don't get that. Can you? That one went right over my head. Like, do you get it, Producer Jim? Did you get that joke? Oh, okay. So I'm being told by Patrick Alog, our call screener, that must apparently is a process of fermentation. I did not know that. That one went right over my head, Doug. I tell you, that one... did you have another one?
All right. There's my audience.
Well, I guess, you know, I'm not a winemaker. I do have a friend who makes his own wines. He crushes the grapes with his feet and everything in a big vat and crazy stuff. Anyways, I did not know that, so I learned something. Okay, if you're crushing grapes, it's not lust, it's must. Use that this weekend at gatherings that you attend. And all right, Doug, well, thanks for that. Hey, I love dad jokes. I'm well known for them. Now that I am a dad, for sure, I use it even more frequently. And I appreciate the humor, appreciate the calls. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Damon in Daly City, California. Hi, Damon.
Yes, hello. I would say that this is kind of cute because yesterday was St. Clair's feast day, and she might have been quoting St. Clair. And St. Clair said, you become what you love, and who you love shapes what you become. And maybe Beth is reconsidering the Eucharist in all of the things that are Catholic, one holy Catholic apostolic. Perhaps she'll do a follow-up and get stir the world again.
That's interesting. Well, and again, thanks for that call, Damon. I really appreciate that. And certainly we do become like that which we love. And that's true in a lot of different ways, isn't it? Some people say that you become like the average of the five people that you hang around the most. And that's certainly true when it comes to being young and when you're growing up in your formative years. And I always say I'm much more concerned about the people my kid is going to be hanging around, even more so than what she might be taught in school or something, untoward she might hear in the media. I'm way more concerned about the influence of friends because we do tend to become like our friends. We have to choose them very wisely, choose our mentors wisely and people that we listen to wisely. And of course, St. Augustine said that, when it comes to the Eucharist, we become what we eat, right? You are what you eat. That's certainly the case when we need to allow what we eat to become us, it's not what, it's a who, it's Christ. And we need to allow him to permeate our being. And it's all, and you might wonder, you see so many people receiving the Eucharist and you wonder, like, why doesn't it make a bigger change? Why doesn't it make a bigger change in my life? And the reason is because it's nothing, there's no fault with Christ. There's enough grace in one particle of one host to save the entire world, or one drop from the chalice of his blood to save the entire world. Why doesn't it happen? Because people make choices to shut him out. And it's like you can only pour so much Coca-Cola into, a gallon. Well, drinking a gallon of Coca-Cola, that sounds like a great thing for a lot of us. But hey, if your container is only a gallon, well, anything that's more than that is going to be wasted. It's going to be spilled over. And so the containers of our hearts, we really have to expand them and make that choice. And I certainly pray that she does turn to the Eucharist, think about the Eucharist, think about the church. I don't know how much Beth Moore has examined these issues, but who knows? Who knows? I do think she's been rejected by a lot of her fellow Protestants for simply being a woman who teaches and who tries to share about the Bible. A lot of people say, no, that's not a woman's place. And I know lots of women who teach in seminaries. I know lots of mothers who teach their children about the faith, and they do a great job with it. And we all are teachers of the faith, for sure. And anyways, but I do pray that she does look into it. It'd be awesome if she came into the one holy Catholic and apostolic church, and she would see that fruit of the vine turned into, through transubstantiation, which we talked about earlier, the blood of Christ. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hey, Brian, I see you there. If you're on the line, stay there. I'll get to Brian's call and more from you after the break. If you want to call in, grab a vine and talk to me right now, no pun intended, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's The Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
That's right. That's the number, 888-914-9149. We're having a great time on the show today on this Friday. Let's go back to the phones right now. Brian from Bangor, Maine is calling. Hey, Brian, good to talk to you again. Thanks for calling back.
Hi, Cale. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. What's happening in Bangor?
Good. Well, I was taking care of my neighbor's pug. They went up to Nova Scotia to visit their family. They're from Canada. And they brought back a couple gifts. And
oh, wow.
One of them happens to be, it's a can of libation called Pleasant Disposition from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. and it has a kind of a cool looking swath on the cover on the can. But when I saw Nova Scotia, I thought of you, so I tuned in, and I'm a little bit late.
No.
But I know it's focused on the gospel today, and so I wanted to. And by the way, you are an incredibly brave soul, because I know your screen. I told you this call might be a little bit off topic, but he'll leave it up to you to answer. So I ran upstairs and grabbed one of the books next to my bed, which is The Power of Silence, which I have all marked up.
Wow, love that book.
And I opened it up, and I'll read you this two lines that I think really hit me with the gospel today. It says, "But we can never create intimacy with God. It always comes from above, and our responsibility is to build the setting in which the encounter can take place."
Wow.
And when I think that, I think of you know, the grace that marriage gives us, and you know, along with the challenges and everything else, and the beauty that comes from that. And it's just, you know how it is when you wake up in the morning, you read the gospel, and it just kind of hits you. It's like, this is what I need to read today. Yeah. And so, anyway, it was kind of timely. So I just wanted to know, you know, I was thinking about you when my neighbor brought that gift back. And then I heard wine or grapes or something.
Yeah, it's kind of on your brain, yeah. Well, it's funny you said it. I don't know if you know this, Brian, but I talked about this earlier in the week, because last week I was on vacation. I went back home to Nova Scotia, so I was just there as well. Now, and by the way, you mentioned that your friend gave you this beer, which came from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. My hometown is Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia. I was born in Halifax, but if you've been there, there's a big harbor, and on the other side of the harbor, there's a couple of bridges there. On the other side of Halifax Harbor is the city of Dartmouth, and Cole Harbour is kind of a suburb of Dartmouth, if you will. So you say this beer is from Dartmouth. You know, I trust it that it's a good one. And it's an IPA, which, if you don't know what that means, it means India Pale Ale. And I know producer Jim knows what that means. I can trust that. But they're really strong. They are really strong. So you got to be careful with those ones. A little bit more ABV on those ones, if you will. And but some of the other stuff you're saying, Brian, it's always great to hear from you. I love the fact that you mentioned The Power of Silence by Cardinal Robert Sarah. That is an incredible book. If anybody is looking for a good spiritual book to read, I highly recommend that. Highly recommend that. It's called The Power of Silence Against the Dictatorship of Noise. Wow, what a cool... Now, Pope Benedict talked about the dictatorship of relativism, but we also have the dictatorship of noise, because a lot of the conversation that's out there, a lot of the chatter that's out there in the world and in the media is nothing but noise. What we really need is the signal, right? Signal versus noise. We need the signal of the gospel. And that's what we try to do here on Relevant Radio, right? We use the media to reach the world for Christ. So we're trying to put out a signal amidst all this noise. And maybe we should just put out silence for a while, just on the airwaves, to encourage people to pray. And that's what we really need to do at some point. And this is one of the things that Cardinal Sarah says in his book, that you encounter God in the silence. So you have to do that. And people are afraid of that. They want to surround themselves with noise, I think, in some ways, because they don't want to hear the voice of God. They're afraid of what he might say to them, what he might have something for them to do. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Jesus always said, do not be afraid. And I love that quote, this idea of that you gave. It was something effective, and I didn't, I wrote down a, you know, sort of my, I jotted down what I think you were saying, and I don't have the book in front of me, but something like, you need to build the environment for the encounter to take place. And when you are in a place of distraction, it's very hard to pray. It's really hard to pray. And so I do think setting the tone and setting the environment is really important. Just even in our home, like in your personal prayer, it's not a bad idea to have a particular room or a particular corner that you go to for prayer, because context, right? When you're in that context, you know, okay, this is a place of prayer. And I just think the more routines you can get into, the better it is, I think, for your spiritual life. So lots of great stuff that you said there, Brian. Really appreciate that call. It's Brian in Bangor, Maine, not too far from Nova Scotia. Hey, if the Canadian provinces had joined the revolution, I would have been a New Englander, I guess you could say. But anyways, let's go now to Bryant, who's calling from Savage, Minnesota. Hey, Bryant.
Hey. I'm not sure if you got, like, told what my question was, but it was regarding the host and the taking of the bread and wine.
Mm. Yep.
And Yes. And I wasn't raised Catholic, and and I guess, you know, I'm kind of exploring Catholicism and trying to understand everything. And from what I understand about that, a certain person, I'm not sure who, has to bless it, and then it will become the host, which is the bread and wine. And then, do I have that right so far?
I'll elaborate and appreciate the fact that you're calling. And Bryant, a listener calling from Minnesota, exploring Catholicism, not yet Catholic, but thinking about the Eucharist. And yeah, essentially, so what happens is there's obviously at the Mass, there is, we've got bread, we've got wine, a chalice of wine mixed with a drop of water. If you've been to a Mass, maybe you've seen this happen. And of course, people always ask, why is it just a drop of water? Well, that's to represent the mingling of the humanity and divinity of Christ, the water representing the humanity. So anyways, having seen that, you mentioned that it's not really so much that someone, quote-unquote, blesses the bread and something happens to it. It has to be a priest or a bishop in the line of apostolic succession, right, who has ordination, valid ordination. And what happens is Christ speaks through them. So, for example, my friend Father Joe, when he says, this is my body, it doesn't become the body of Father Joe. It's Jesus Christ borrowing the vocal cords, if you will, of that priest or bishop, and the consecration happens. So in every Eucharist, you've got to have the right, you can't just say anything, right? In every sacrament, there's something called the form and the matter. Now, the form is the words, the thing that is said, and the formula, if you will, and then the matter is, in this case, the bread, and the chalice of wine mixed with water. And once those words are spoken over the host, the chalice, they become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. Now, it still looks like bread and wine, still tastes like bread and wine, smells like it, feels like it, all that stuff. Those are what are called not to get too technical here, those are called the accidents. It's the outward appearance, if you will. But the substance, what it is, has been transformed into the body and blood of Christ in a sacramental way. So that's what happens. And this is exactly what Jesus himself promised, instituted in the New Testament. And that's what he commanded to be done at the sacrifice of the very first Mass, which happened at the Last Supper. Does that help to answer your question, Brian?
It answers that part for sure. I would say, the way that I have always understood the taking of the bread and wine is that it was a significant
like a symbol. A lot of non-Catholics would say, "Oh, it's only a symbol."
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. It was a symbolic of what he did.
Yeah, a lot of people do say that. A lot of non-Catholic Christians would say that. And there's various. I once recall seeing a book that dealt with Christ's words at the Last Supper when he said, "This is my body." What did he mean by that? There were like 35 different interpretations of what different takes on what he may have meant by that. But of course, what we do know is that he did mean something by it. And the question is, what was it? And it makes a huge difference. Obviously, it makes an incredible difference. This is either Christ or it isn't. And so now, if it isn't Christ, then at worst, we Catholics are guilty of idolatry. We literally worship the Eucharist, Christ in the Eucharist, because we believe he's there. We believe he is there. Now, if he's not there, we're at worst idolaters, although we would still think that he's there, so we, you know, how much guilt would be imputed if we were wrong. But a lot is at stake here, and when you look at what the early church wrote about it, there's Eucharistic realism from the very beginning. And you look at the Gospel of John in John chapter 6, and that's a really good chapter to read, by the way, Brian. If you want to know about the Eucharist, you can read John chapter 6. The whole thing is good. But verse 51 is really key. John 6, 51, when he says, "The bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." He spends the whole time, he's preaching a homily, if you will, in the synagogue at Capernaum, Jesus is, and he says, "You must eat my flesh and drink my blood, or else there is no life in you." You know, this is eternal life. And so the question is, what is it? Well, he says it in John 6, 51. He says, "The bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." Now, let's fast forward a little bit. Ignatius of Antioch, one of my favorite saints, Bryant, he died in 107, somewhere 107 to 110 AD. People dispute the dates, but he was martyred for his faith in the Roman Colosseum. It's kind of like the movie Gladiator, if you've seen that. Thrown to the wild beasts. And one of the things that he said in a letter that he wrote on the way to his death, it was a letter to the church at Smyrna. And again, you can Google this, you can look this up. He talks about the Eucharist, and he says, in the letter to the Smyrnians, chapter 6, the heretics, the false teachers, have left the church, because they no longer confess the Eucharist to be the flesh of Jesus Christ. And he says it's the same flesh which suffered for us on the cross, and that the Father in his goodness raised up again on the third day. So the same Jesus who was crucified, who was resurrected, ascended into heaven, this is the Jesus we're receiving in the Eucharist. So it's all over the early church fathers. And by the way, Ignatius of Antioch was in contact with the Apostle John when he was a young man. The same guy who wrote John chapter 6, who knew Jesus personally, was very close to him at his side. And so I think he had a pretty good idea of what Jesus meant. So we run out of time, but what a great call. Thank you so much, Brian. God bless all of you who have called. Have a great weekend, everybody. Jim Shaper produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. Timory and Father Rocky are up next, so stay tuned. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.